On one side of the border, there are millions of jobs for the taking. On the other side of the border, there are millions of arms eager to take the job. Along the border, anarchy reigns supreme. Illegal is the word of the day. This leads one to ask, should we return to the days of the strong arm program? There you are, tuned into the 506th edition of The Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Portofino who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Jay Cruz on the boards, producer Carol Stafford and Kelsey Olson on the phones and the stories. Hello, Kelsey.
Good morning.
Carol's in there on the phones. Jay's in there on the boards.
What's up?
Folks, the United States and Mexico share a 2,000-mile border. North of the border are millions of jobs waiting to be filled, and south of the border are millions of people who want to take the jobs. Along the border, chaos reigns supreme, or so it would seem at any rate, and as a consequence, millions of hardworking people have become illegal. There was, at one time, a way to manage this chaos. It was called the Bracero program. The Bracero simply means strong arm. Here in the United States, we call people who work in the field hands. But in Mexico, they refer to them as arms. And thus, the Bracero program was a program that invited people south of the border to work north of the border as official guests. In 1964, the Bracero program fell out of political favor in the North and was put out of business by President Lyndon Johnson. Where there was something to control the flow of immigrants, today there is practically nothing. This leads one to ask, should we readopt the Bracero program and bring order back to the border? Here to help us find some answers, we have a couple of guests. We're trying to reach one, but I think we have the other. We have Dr. Philip Martin, who is a professor of agriculture economics at the University of California, Davis, and also author of Promise Unfulfilled. Dr. Martin, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning.
Glad to have you aboard. You're vacationing with your family up there in the Washington area?
In Washington, yes.
Oh, good. Well, Dr. Martin, they say that economics is the dismal science, but it really isn't, is it?
Well, unfortunately, it does require people to make trade-offs. Trade-offs between good things. That is, we can eat ice cream or we can eat cake, but if we eat both, we're going to gain weight. So we do have to make trade-offs between good things. And that's what we teach. I mean, it takes no education to choose between a bad and a good. You choose the good. But when we have two goods, we do have to choose. We do have to have rules for deciding which of the two goods gets higher priority.
Mm-hmm.
And that holds in the labor market as well as in many other areas of life.
How did you become interested in labor as part of the agricultural economy?
Well, I came to California to actually work on something slightly different, which was estimating the rate of return to public expenditures for agricultural research and development. That is, we have...
Oh, interesting. So we spend money and we get something in return, and how do you measure that?
Something in return for that. And at the time I came to California, there was the state of California had passed a labor relations law. There was quite a bit of controversy over labor relations, and so I was asked to look into some of those issues, and did, and therefore I do some teaching on farm labor issues and do some research on it as well.
Well, let me ask you this, Dr. Martin. The Bracero program, yes or no, and maybe a quick why.
Well, let me sort of go back and sort of clarify a few things. First of all, there was not one Bracero program. There were at least five different Bracero programs. The first one was actually between 1917 and 1921.
Mm-hmm.
Then there were a series of Bracero programs between 1942 and 1964.
So it's starting in the Second World War then?
The first one started in the First World War. The second one started in the Second World War.
So the idea is that most of our strong arms are all going off to war, so we bring laborers in to work in our fields, correct?
Correct. But here's the interesting point. The programs were very small during the war.
Mm-hmm.
The second Bracero program, which was the major one, never got above 50,000 workers during World War II. But 10 years later in peacetime, it got up to almost 500,000 workers. So the rule in both programs is, during the war, when supposedly the need for labor is greatest, the programs were smallest.
Mm-hmm.
After the war ended, when presumably people were coming back from the war, and therefore there would be a need for fewer guest workers, the programs got bigger. Now, that's not just unique to the Bracero program. Every guest worker program in the world, practically every guest worker program in the world, gets bigger and lasts longer.
Why is that?
Than anyone expects.
Why is that?
That's for two reasons. I call them distortion and dependence. Distortion means that most employers don't hire guest workers. Only 2% of American farmers ever hired braceros. Okay, so it's a very small group of people who hire migrants. But they assume that the migrants will continue to be available, and they make investment decisions based on that assumption. So they plant apple trees in places where there are no people. They planted in the Bracero program cotton on the west side of the San Joaquin Valley.
Right.
And at that time, there were no people. If the government then changes its mind and says, we're going to now stop the program, I, as a farmer, am going to protest very strongly, because I will say, without Braceros, I'm going to go out of business.
Because and there's nobody to work. Statement. There's nobody to
because
work there.
There's nobody to do the work. So now we raise, that's distortion in the sense that the government never really said how long the workers were going to continue to be available. Remember, the assumption was it was a wartime program. But, of course, the program continued after the war ended. People made assumptions that the workers would continue to be available. You can't blame them for that. But that made then the program grow over time.
Right.
And that's not just the Bracero program. That happens to many other guest worker programs with the Turks in Germany or with Indonesians working in Malaysia. I mean, it's the same process.
Mm-hmm.
That the idea being that we assume these workers will continue to be available. We make investment decisions. That makes it hard for the government then to manage, as it were, the program.
Well, that being the case, Philip, give us a. We're going to have to take a quick break, and I want to introduce our other guest. Bracero program, yes or no? Just to give us a quick kick in the
well,
back.
Well, it doesn't. It's not yes or no. That's like saying immigration.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. That's a great answer. Let me go to introduce our next guest. John Fund is with us today, who graciously called in. We had some phone problems, but he called in. He's a he is a editorial writer, a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure
to have you aboard. We're just doing a quick intro before we have to go to a break. But John, let me ask you, you're a political observer. You write about political issues for the Wall Street Journal. The Bracero program, yes or no?
Well, compared to what? Compared to the status quo, almost anything would be better.
Yes, compared to what we're doing now, which is
crossing the desert. We've had 1.2 million illegal arrests. We have 10 million people without papers in this country. The status quo is clearly not working. Almost any program that were rational would be an improvement on what we have.
So that's a Solid answer. Okay. Folks, what do you think out there? Do you think we should readopt the Bracero program to bring order back to our border where there clearly is none at the moment? As you know, the food chain is media that talks with you, not at you. So pick up your phone and join us today. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Again, 800-624-2665 and 831-479-1080. If you can't get through on the phone, you can always participate by logging on the forum page at metrofarm.com. We will go in search of answers with John Fun from the Wall Street Journal and Philip Martin from UC Davis. So please do stay tuned. Welcome back out there. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson with you today. We're talking about the border. And should we or should we not return to the days of the Bracero immigrant worker program? As Dr. Philip Martin was telling us, this program has essentially was born in the World Wars. We sent our boys away to fight the war, and we needed workers. So we brought workers into the country and to work in the fields. But after the Second World War, something funny happened. Our young men did not go back into the fields. They moved into the city and worked in the factories and whatnot. So the Bracero program, instead of going away, expanded. And evidently, we brought it back somewhere after World War II, or did it continue just to grow after World War II, Dr. Martin?
It grew. The wartime Bracero program ended in 1947, and that didn't mean that. But farmers were allowed. Well, let me explain. During the first program, there were lots of problems. There was discrimination against Mexicans, especially in Texas, and there was some farmers did not pay the wages that they had promised, or what was probably more correct is they charged workers for housing and food, so that some Mexicans returned actually owing money to their U.S. employers rather than having savings from having worked in the United States. That meant that the Mexican government insisted for the World War II program that the U.S. government be the employer of the Braceros, which it was. Meaning that if I did not pay, I as a farmer did not pay my Braceros, the federal government would step in and pay the wages that should have been paid. That program ended at the end of 1947, but farmers were still allowed to make contracts with Mexican workers under Mexican government supervision to bring workers into the United States. That program didn't work very well because many farmers did not want to go through the Mexican government bureaucracy. And right. So they encouraged workers to come illegally. They were so-called wetbacks. And the U.S. at that time had no fines or sanctions on employers who knowingly hired illegal workers. And so we had a huge growth not in legal braceros, but in illegal workers.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened until roughly the Korean War started in the early 1950s, and in 1951, the United States approved yet another Bracero program, so-called Public Law 78, which is very similar to the current agricultural guest worker program. Keep in mind, the United States has about 15 guest worker programs today, 15 wow. programs under which foreigners may come to the United States legally and go to work for a particular period of time. One of those programs is an agricultural program, the so-called H-2A program,
mm-hmm.
and it admits every year about 40,000 foreign farm workers, mostly from Mexico, to work on U.S. farms. And that program is very much like the Bracero program that existed from 1951 until it ended in 1964. Now, you will hear, and many people will say, why don't more people come through the H-2A program since it's there, and since 98% of all farmer requests for H-2A workers are approved? And the answer is that many farmers say it's too cumbersome, it's too complicated. You have to plan ahead for the workers, they have to be provided housing, they have to be provided with a particular minimum wage.
Oh, you have to provide them housing?
They have to, well, The idea was, remember, under the Bracero program, when workers were not provided housing, which is the way it was between 47, 48, and 51, there were examples of workers being found in very substandard conditions.
It, was this where the Harvest of Shame, the Edward R. Murrow piece came in around 1960?
The Edward R. Murrow piece came in about a decade after that. But each of the provisions that was put into the law, it typically reflected particular circumstances that were found to have happened before that provision was put in. Let me give you a simple example that listeners can relate to. About 4 years ago, 13 workers were killed in Fresno County when a truck hit the van that was carrying them. And the van had taken the seats out and put two benches along the sides.
Right.
And when they were hit, people flew and they died. The state, in response to that, passed a law which said vans that are used to carry more than eight workers must have seats and seat belts. There's been a bill introduced in Congress to make that now a federal law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is a response to a specific tragedy. What will happen, or what I predict will happen, is that some vans used to transport farm workers will in fact have seats and seat belts, but in other cases, the fact that you need insurance, you can carry fewer workers, means that in some cases you will drive the farm worker transportation underground.
Underground, yeah.
And that may be worse. And that's what we said at the outset. It's not that things are good and bad. They're choices. They're difficult choices. As John said coming on, I mean, there are very difficult choices. How do you improve upon a current situation? I mean, how do you avoid the first step that the doctors learn, which is do no harm?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always an easy thing to do in practice.
John also made mention of the fact that what we have now is simply chaos.
Well, I guess it depends. I'm not going to defend what we have now. I don't think anyone would defend a system in which we are bringing in, roughly, we are admitting 200,000 legal Mexican immigrants a year. We have many, many millions of legal Mexican crossings into the United States for tourism and business and study and work. And we catch about, between 1.1, 1.2 million Mexicans a year just inside the borders, and people die at the rate of one a day trying to get into the United States. I mean, no one, I don't think, that few people would defend the status quo. But the reason we're having this program and the reason we're having the debate in Congress is there's disagreement on how to do better.
Okay. And, John, what are the two sides of this? You're the political guy here. What are the two sides?
Well, I think the two sides, very simply, are those who believe that the current system somehow is something we can muddle through, and those who believe that we need a system which can legalize a lot of the people who are in this country or want to come to this country. Now, I certainly will agree with Professor Martin that the old program had some abuses. But remember, we were a different country 50 years ago. We were about one quarter as wealthy in real terms as we are today. The Department of Labor was much less involved in enforcement. In fact, the entire Department of Labor's enforcement team in Texas was basically under the thumb of Senator Lyndon Johnson, and he didn't want any enforcement of the Bracero program.
Well, does anybody want enforcement of the...
Well, I'm simply saying today is you can design a program that would, I think, certainly avoid the abuses of the old Bracero program, because we're a different country and we certainly have a different attitude towards outrages, and we have mass communication and mass media that can highlight outrages more quickly. I would simply say to the professor's point about the current H2A program, it's cumbersome in a way that really doesn't make it work, and I don't think it's because people don't want to provide housing. This is what John Hancock, who was President Bill Clinton's chief of agricultural certification, said back in 1997. This is his quote from congressional testimony. Quote, "The current program with its multiple regulations and related requirements is too complex for the average grower to comprehend and use without the aid of a lawyer or experienced agent. The H2A program is not currently a reliable mechanism to meet labor needs in situations where domestic workers are not available," unquote. Now, that's from Bill Clinton's administration. So the current agricultural program is not working. The current chaos is not working. So we're going to have to work towards something else, and that's where I think people of goodwill can try to compromise. And I think there are both Democrats and Republicans in Congress that are trying to work towards a solution, because right now, as Professor Morton said, people are dying, people are crossing the border, and we have an awful lot of abuses, because once people live in the shadows, they can be abused. The way to end the worst abuses is to bring them above the shadows, legalize them. Therefore, they will be certainly more willing to complain, and certainly we can find them and correct any abuses more quickly.
Okay, folks, when we get back, I'm going to ask John Fund to start with, and Professor Martin, whose side is on what side? What do the Democrats want to do? What do the Republicans want to do? And what do you think we should do? Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're talking about the Bracero program and immigrant labor. Our phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phones and join us. We will be right back. Folks, the United States and Mexico share a 2,000-mile border. North of the border are millions of jobs waiting to be filled. South of the border are millions of people who want to take those jobs. Along the border, chaos reigns supreme, and as a consequence, millions of hardworking people have become illegal. There was a time, quite a few times, as Dr. Philip Martin has been telling us, that there was a way to manage this chaos, and there still is today, I guess. And it's called the Bracero Program, and it invited, essentially, people south of the border to work north of the border as official guests. But somehow, it all broke down, the programs, and today we have chaos. And instead of having official guests working in our fields, we have illegal aliens working in our fields. So we're looking at the Bracero Program and seeing if we should readopt what seemed to work so long ago, and bring it back today. Dr. Philip Martin is the professor of ag economy at UC Davis, also the author of A Promise Unfulfilled. And we also have John Fund, who is a columnist and editorial writer for the Wall Street Journal. John Fund, let's go back to you really quickly. Are there two sides to this issue, as there seems to be two sides to everything in the United States, on how to reinvigorate the Bracero program?
Well, I think there are three sides. Congress, you have a group that simply wants enforcement only. They don't want to have any discussion of any kind of legal program. They basically, a lot of them, frankly, don't like immigrants because they have introduced legislation to reduce legal immigration. Uh-huh. That's one group. Then there's a second group, which I think is trying to work towards a compromise. That would be led by Congressman Mike Pence of Indiana and Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison of Texas. Then there's a third group, including a lot of Democrats, who pushed for the Senate bill, which has a much faster path to citizenship for a lot of the illegals currently in this country. The problem is neither the enforcement only or the quick path to citizenship approach is politically sustainable. You can't get it through Congress. So the question is, even though it will have faults, what compromise can be fashioned that can improve the current situation? That's the real issue, and I think Dr. Martin addressed that squarely. You know, what do we do? First, do no harm, but to improve a situation that's clearly not tenable.
Well, Dr. Martin, what do we do?
Well, I actually think we're going to have to wind up with some kind of guest worker program. The question is, how do we design a program that avoids some of the problems that we had in past programs? And I think the thing we have to do is we have to identify what went wrong in the past and see what we can do to avoid that happening this go around. As I said, the one issue with all guest worker programs is this idea of distortion. That is, employers start making investment decisions on the assumption that workers will continue to be available.
There will be a never-ending supply of guest workers, right?
Demand.
Yeah.
There will always be a supply. In a world of 200 countries in which the average wage gap between the 30 rich countries and the 170 poor countries is 21 to 1, there will always be workers, if not for Mexico, China. Remember, we are bringing Thai workers into the state of Washington, into California, to do farm work, even though Thailand is quite a bit further away than Mexico. So we're not looking just at Mexico. We're looking at an entire global labor force where there are plenty of people who are willing to come.
Do you remember the time not too long ago, Dr. Martin, where Chinese ships filled with immigrants crashed on the shores of California, and I just remember that as being something that happened, and it seemed especially portentous because, like you say, there are so many people out there in the world who would rather be here working than where they are not working right now.
Well, it actually was in Vancouver.
It was in Vancouver.
And it was in, remember, China is a special case. It's the kind of thing that is, as John Fund said, it's what makes the debate over reform so tough. In the Chinese issue is very peculiar for two reasons. One is, in 1989, there was a Tiananmen incident in which the soldiers killed students, and that caused most industrial countries to allow Chinese students studying at that time in their countries to stay as immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And gave, of course, since many Chinese would love to have an immigrant visa for the United States or Canada or the UK, that gave an incentive for many Chinese to go abroad to study. And it is still true today that 90% of the Chinese who get PhDs at U.S. universities stay. That happens to be good for the United States because you don't want to turn away well-educated people. It does add to our human capital and economy. On the other hand, we give asylum to Chinese who say that they face persecution in China because of China's one-child policy. So now we have moved far away from braceros to some of the issues that arise in the way the United States administers its immigration policy. Clearly then, if we do give asylum to Chinese
then
who
not
say they face persecution, they can easily turn to smugglers to get into the United States, and if they're caught, say that I want to apply for asylum because at home I will face persecution. We give asylum to all Cubans who make it to U.S. land. So it's not as if we have an immigration system that is not just the idea of the camel being designed by a committee. We have an immigration system that no one, I don't think, would ever set out to design, but it reflects a whole lot of decisions made along the way in response to unique or particular circumstances.
Right. So there's no consistency.
There's very little consistency.
John Fund, what do we do about the lack of consistency when you have a program that's spread all over the world like this? You have one policy for this country, one policy for that country, one policy for political people, one policy for braceros or people with strong arms to work in the fields?
Well, the vast majority of attention is focused on our problem with the southern border, although there are other considerations.
Right.
Look, there were shortcomings of the bracero program, but let's talk about the success of the program. In 1953, we had an immigration...
Oh, God, what a wonderful subject to come back to after this break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We've got Dr. Philip Martin, who is a professor of ag economy at UC Davis, also author of Promise Unfulfilled. We have John Fund, who is the columnist and an editorial writer for the Wall Street Journal. And we have you. Phone numbers today, should you decide to participate in this program, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, or on the forum page at metrofarm.com. We will be right back with John Fund, Dr. Martin, and you right after these important messages, so please do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
So how do we bring order to the border? Some say the way we do it is by fast-tracking citizenship for all of those who have managed to scamper across. Others say, no, we must punish those who came here illegally and those who hired them. And somewhere in the middle of that must be a solution. What do you think out there? Do you think we should bring the Bracero program back and somehow make it manageable? Give us your thoughts. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're working with John Fund, who is a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. John, before the break, you were talking about how the Bracero program did good. How did it do good for the United States and for Mexico?
Well, we had a crisis on our border in 1953. We had 885,000 people arrested, and that was at a time when the population of the U.S. was half what it is today. So if you extrapolated that to today, it would be something akin to about 1.7 million arrests. And as Dr. Martin said, we're at about 1.2 or 1.2.
So it was a stampede for the border.
Yes. And we expanded the existing small Bracero program. We also allowed workers to ask for specific individuals rather than just accept anyone who came through the program, so they could hire people that they had some knowledge with or had some knowledge of their skills. And apprehension started to drop. We also had an enforcement program which basically convinced employers, you better get with the legal program because the illegal program is going to have more enforcement. And by 1959, we had cut the number of arrests across the border down to 45,000. Now, that's not a verbal typo. I said 45,000. That means a reduction of 95%. Now, we started to weaken the Bracero program by not allowing people to request individual workers in 1960, so apprehensions went up. But they stayed under 100,000 until 1964, when Lyndon Johnson, who had always opposed the Bracero program, was president, and he cut a deal with the labor unions basically saying, we're going to end the program because you view this as unfair competition with your union members and because it was also seen as retarding union organization in the fields. Cesar Chavez was certainly opposed to the Bracero program.
Right. Competition.
Right. But the program, as the Congressional Research Service concluded in 1980, had a dramatic effect, together with some increased enforcement, in getting rid of the stampede, certainly reducing the number of deaths involved, and also, remember, the worst abuses in the Bracero program, according to the former workers I've talked with, and I've talked with close to a dozen plus many of their children, was that Mexico was withholding about 10% of their wages from the program and promising to give them back when they returned to Mexico. A lot of those workers never got their money back, so there were abuses, but we can certainly solve those problems, and I think the current Mexican government is a far more honest and far more efficient entity, that, and probably that abuse can be curbed with a bilateral agreement between Mexico and the U.S.
Huh. That's a good answer. Let's go to the phones. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, the Bracero program, which literally means strong arm. Let's go to Bill. Bill, welcome to the food chain. Fire away, please.
Yeah, two questions. First of all, how are we going to get rid of the 40,000 F-13 gang members in the country? And the other question is, how do we get these people not to suck off the social systems? I mean, they're getting subsidies for utilities and every other thing.
John?
Well, first of all, many subsidies they don't get. They don't collect Social Security payments, even though they're paying into the Social Security system in many cases. Certainly, if you regularize the process and they're working, they're not subsidizing, they're actually contributing net to the system. The key is to make sure that they're brought under a legal program that can be controlled. Lastly, as for the gang members, if you talk to people at the border, they'll tell you the way to stop the gang members and the terrorists from entering the country, and the way to have the resources to deport them is to make the problem more manageable. With 1.2 million arrests, you're chasing busboys and gardeners rather than gang members often. So the way to do it is to have a legal guest worker program, reduce the number of illegal people crossing the border. You can watch the border more carefully. And I'll give you an example. In 1969, Richard Nixon went to the Mexican border, went to every major city along the border and declared Operation Zero Tolerance. He was going to declare a war on drugs and stop the transshipment of drugs across the border from Mexico. We searched every car and truck crossing the border. It was complete and total enforcement. It obviously completely collapsed because you cannot run a modern economy with that kind of backlog. So the program morphed into spending billions and billions of dollars at interdiction. It hasn't worked. If anyone in your audience believes that we have stopped the transshipment of drugs across the border from Mexico, they're probably on one of those substances that Nixon was trying to stop.
Yeah, amen to that. Okay, let's try. Let's try Tim. Tim, are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, I have a couple solutions. Well, first of all, my girlfriend is a legal immigrant from Europe. Studied many years to get her dual citizenship, came all legally, is probably the most patriotic American I know, far more than many U.S. citizens. As far as stopping the traffic coming in of illegal immigrants, it's pretty simple. You're not going to be able to pick all these people up and kick them out of the country. It's just not feasible.
So what's simple?
What you can do is you do stop them from coming in. You put a wall up. You put whatever needs to stop. The people that are here are here. People that want to keep coming in are going to do it with passports legally. No exceptions.
John Fund, what do you think?
I think Dr. Martin probably can verify some of this. Anytime you have an unrealistic enforcement system where you're trying to stop too much and not focusing on the specific parts of the problem, like the terrorists and the drugs, you're going to have a breakdown in law enforcement. We have a breakdown in our Border Patrol. We try to screen people for honesty and integrity. We only take one out of every 30 applicants. But all you have to do is go to the papers, whether it's in San Diego or El Paso or Tucson. And my brother has 30 years of experience in law enforcement in Arizona, and he certainly can testify to this. We have an epidemic of corruption in the country. We had two brothers flee to Mexico because they apparently were taking payoffs smugglers. If you don't have a realistic enforcement program, if you put up that wall and try to prevent everyone from coming in when we have a pent-up demand for labor in this country that Dr. Martin talked about, you're going to have corruption. You cannot have a law enforcement agency stand up against that. You have to have realistic enforcement that undertakes to understand human nature.
No matter
putting
how
up a wall is only going to create more corruption in the Border Patrol. It will not solve your problem.
No matter how tall the wall is, right? Folks, when we get back,
pent up demand.
Yep. When we get back, we're going to. When we get back,
we'll have people come.
Okay. When we get back, we're going to ask you what the solution is. Please do stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. Columnist for the Wall Street Journal, John Fund, And yours truly, Michael Olson. And we have a bucket full of telephone calls and a thimble full of minutes. So, John, let me ask you really quickly before we go back to the phones, what would a good Bracero program look like?
Well, I think if your listeners were to go to the website of Congressman Mike Pence from Indiana.
Pence, P-E-N-C-E?
P-E-N-C-E. I think they'd get the outlines. It would be a program that would say, we need to surface, we need to bring up to legality many of the people here. The way to do that is require them to go back to their native country for a brief period of time, register with a private employment agency that will get them papers within 2 weeks. If they don't have a criminal record, if they have a clean history, they get a five-year work visa to come back into this country. It's renewable if you have some evidence that you've learned some English and have kept away from the law, and it's renewable again. And eventually, after 17 years, you can transfer that to permanent residency status and eventually citizenship. So it's a harder process for the Senate than the Senate bill, which has very quick citizenship rules, but it's a realistic one because, frankly, this has become such an emotional issue, people are thinking more with their heart than their head.
Right, right. And thus a compromise between the real strict presentation and the real loose presentation.
Right.
So something that...
That's how our legislative process works. You got to meet in the middle somewhere.
Yes. Okay, let's go quickly to Eric. Eric, welcome to the food chain.
Yeah, hi. I'm listening to your program. The solution, I mean, in my mind, is that we live in a capitalistic society, and the basis of really how everything functions in the means of exchange between one or, you know, two or more parties is currency. And the whole attachment to what brings people to this country is the means of earning an income. And the
right.
same thing, if you look at...
Your point quickly, Eric. We're just about out of time.
Okay. If you eliminated the cash currency in the United States, as of September 11th, everybody was required to have two forms of ID to get a bank account.
Mm-hmm.
You would be able to ID people. You'd be able to track all the transactions. You would know who's coming and going in the country, and it would end up... reducing a lot in our car.
Eric, I think that's an interesting idea, but I'll tell you, that's even more complicated than managing a guest worker program.
Now, amen to that. John Fun, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Philip Martin, thank you so much for joining us. Tim, thank you for joining us, and all the rest of you callers. This has been The Food Chain. Michael Olson, stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain. And hey, remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.